Talk radio for people who never thought they'd listen to talk radio. It's Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.
Can Bobby love, love, can Bobby love?
40th anniversary of the pop culture phenomenon that changed rock and roll and the way it was perceived in America on television when the Beatles made their debut on the Ed Sullivan Show. Here's a guy who knew the Beatles firsthand because he was one of only three American reporters to follow the boys on their tours of America throughout 1964 and 65. He's the author of Ticket to Ride, Larry Kane. Happy to have him back
hey,
on
Paul,
the show.
Hey, great to be here. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. So were you at the Ed Sullivan Theater 40 years ago today?
No, I was not there 40 years ago. I was watching on television. 3 days later, I greeted the Beatles as they came to Miami. And the following Sunday, and this is something a lot of people don't know, the second performance, live performance on Sullivan, was from the Deauville Hotel in Miami.
Right.
The third performance, and there were three consecutive Sundays, can you imagine the impact of that, was a tape that was actually taped on the afternoon of February 9th, 40 years ago today, at the Studio 50 in New York, which is now called the Sullivan Theater. So the first one was live, the second one was live, and the third one was a tape. They were already back in England when the third one aired.
So that third one they actually taped before the first live broadcast.
Absolutely. It was a rehearsal and a taping.
Interesting. Now, being around them when they performed in Miami on the Sullivan Show, could you hear them?
Absolutely. It was a small nightclub called the Mau Mau Lounge, and it was a cabaret club where big artists like Johnny Mathis and other people sang in those days. You could hear him. You could hear him in a lot of places. You could hear him on the Sullivan Show at home. When you did hear them, I think we talked about this last time, I saw 59 concerts. I've probably seen more Beatles concerts in person than any human being on the planet, with the exception, perhaps, of the Beatles and their inner circle. When you could hear them, it was flawless entertainment. It was just perfect. It really replicated the sound on the recorded music. They were just great.
When you met them that second weekend in Miami, which is where you were working in radio at the time, were they happy with that first Sullivan Show?
Yes, they were. They were also a little nervous about the second and the third. Remember that there were a lot of nerves involved in the first Sullivan Show. I also had the pleasure of watching them at the last Sullivan Show, which was August 1965, just prior to the Shea Stadium concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I was backstage with them there, and they were nervous wrecks. Especially Lennon. He was very, very crazed.
Why do you think so nervous?
Well, I think that Lennon was nervous before every concert. There was a tremendous difference, contrast between him and McCartney. Lennon would pace and everything. He'd been taking pills since he was a little boy in terms of keeping himself together, speed and things like that. And he would pace back and forth and smoke profusely. McCartney, on the other hand, couldn't wait to get out there. He was the man who never met the stage he didn't like. And he made love to the audience with his eyes. I mean, McCartney was incredible on stage, and Lennon was too. But they really had both different demeanors prior to the time they went on. I mean, McCartney went on very cocky, sure of himself, and he played through it. And yet, behind the scenes, he was the quietest Beatle, Paul McCartney.
How about George and Ringo? How did they act?
They just had a good time. George was very sullen and quiet before concerts. Ringo couldn't wait to get out there. Remember that there was always a safety factor. When it came to Sullivan, they were performing for about 700 people. It wasn't that big of a deal, but at the concerts, there were a lot of very close calls, and there were a lot of things flying. And when you're up there doing your thing in the glare of lights and seeing people rush you by the thousands and seeing things flying all over the place, you wonder if something's going to hit you. I know John got hit in the eye, and once he got stabbed in the chest by a stick pin. And those things hurt.
Were the crowds going crazy outside the Sullivan shows, too?
Yeah, there were crowds cordoned off on the other side of Broadway and 7th Avenue. The Sullivan Theater is located at between 50 and 51st. That's why they call it Studio 50. Today it's renamed by Dave Letterman as the Ed Sullivan Theater. It was really something. The whole New York scene was something every time they were there, because New York, as you know, with its grids and downtowns, is a very hard place to contain people. So it was pretty wild. There were two shows in August of 1965 there. One was a daytime show, which was a rehearsal, and they did let people in for that. And the second was a nighttime show. They wanted a sound check in the afternoon. And it was just spectacular to see them so sure of themselves. And you know, when you do live, of anything, and I did live television as an anchor person for 38 years, there's a nervous tension involved in it. And it's, you know, they didn't have, and I think it's important to notice that they didn't have the Janet Jackson stuff. They didn't have the clouds, the mist, the laser lights, the strobe lights, all the bells and whistles. These were four guys with a band and drums and a bunch of guitars, and they went out there and they did their thing. There was no special amplification. There was no wires. There were no flares. There was nothing happening around them to distract from it, like you see at all these major concerts around the world. You wonder about Britney Spears and some of the other stars and Justin Timberlake without the stuff, mm-hmm. how they would look.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What I thought was interesting, and I've watched the DVD that has those four Ed Sullivan shows that they did, and it's a lot of fun to watch them for a couple of reasons. One is to see all the other acts that were on there.
Oh, that's great, isn't it?
There's a guy who, after the Beatles finished, came out and did Card Tricks.
I know.
And then the cast of Oliver, and then Frank Gorshin, who a couple of years later was the Riddler on Batman.
Right.
And then an Olympic athlete was introduced in the audience, and then a British vaudeville star named Tessie O'Shea, and then the comedy team of McCall and Brill, who, by the way, called that the worst night of their lives, being on the Ed Sullivan Show the night the Beatles were on, because no one cared, and they bombed big time.
Well, you also have to understand that the Sullivan Show, for those of you who are not old enough to understand what it was a staple of the early powerful days of television from the 1950s through the mid-1960s, and it was the last of a breed. It was a program that was live. It came from New York. It was 8 o'clock on Sunday nights. It was all live, everything. Rarely was there a tape in there or a cinescope. And what you saw was what you got. Therefore, the famous Jackie Mason finger that he hurled at Mr. Sullivan.
Yep.
You know, there were a lot of things that were live, and there were a lot of things that were very dramatic. And I think that going on live on television is an art form. Now, you don't see it much. You saw it at the Grammys last night, and even there was a lot of production. But, you know, it's just something different. And the Sullivan Show was drama. It was high drama. Every week you knew something was going to happen, and he brought out unusual acts. And it was a very smart show because he had something for everybody. I mean, you know, the people who watch that show, 70 million people, don't laugh. I'm sure that the person who did the card tricks was very popular with a lot of people.
Yep.
You know, he had animal acts all the time, constantly.
And the plate spinners.
So the Beatles were in very good company that night.
Yeah. Now, the other interesting thing about that first show, which you watched on TV because you didn't get to meet him until a few days later, but if you recall this, the second song that they did, and I played it a little while ago, the second song they did was Till There Was You, which
was from The Music Man.
It's from The Music Man. And I thought this was very interesting, and I only know this in hindsight, that Brian Epstein, the manager of the Beatles, essentially wanted to put that in there and have them perform that song not only on the album but also on the Sullivan Show, because he knew that there would be parents of teenagers who would look at these guys and say, what are we doing with these freaks on TV? But if you put in a song from The Music Man, maybe it lessens that
That it's interesting how the Beatles have so formed music has so shaped music that there are many people today, some of whom who may be listening right now,
mm-hmm.
who don't know that Till There Was You was from a musical,
mm-hmm.
who think that it's a Beatles song,
because
it was so beautifully done by Paul McCartney.
Right, and during that broadcast, while they were getting to the instrumental break in the middle, that's when the director cut in the chyrons and told everybody the names of the Beatles. Oh, there's Paul.
Right,
and
right.
They put that up, and then George, and then Ringo.
Right, they were brand new.
And then when they got to John, under it, it said, sorry, girls, he's married.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Which was very, very odd.
It's so 50s, you know, so 60s.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you something else about their music. I mean, first of all, at that point, they didn't have Yesterday, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have some of the ballads that were so, that became so synonymous with them, Michelle, things like that. But what was really interesting there to me was that they put in Till There Was You, and later on, the Beatles in some of their concerts in 64 started doing Twist and Shout as their last song. Now, both songs are from other artists.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, there are young people who will tell you, people in their 20s and 30s, that Twist and Shout is a Beatles song.
When, of course, it's actually an Isley Brothers song.
But they were so good at it, they owned it. Then Till There Was You, as you and I know, came from The Music Man, which sometimes comes back. By the way, the first time I saw The Music Man man, was at that wonderful theater that you have, the Muni.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Still there.
Uh-huh.
The Outdoor Theater in St. Louis.
Yep.
And that was a very popular song with adults, and it was very clever. But it's interesting. Today, kids who listen or young people who listen to the Beatles albums think that Till There Was You was their song.
Absolutely.
Because they did it so beautifully.
Yep. Talking with Larry Kane, author of Ticket to Ride, who was on tour with the Beatles throughout 64 and 65. And when we talked last September, you were telling me you were, what, 21 years old at the time?
I was 21 when I toured with them. As you know, I did not want to travel with them. I was a very serious journalist. I spent a year in St. Louis, you know, the entire year of 1963, covering news in that great city. And when I got back to Miami, the Beatles thing erupted. And it was kind of interesting to me that this explosion of emotion occurs. And my program director comes to me and says, we want you to travel with them. And honestly, and I'm not playing a game here, I said to him, why would someone who has the journalistic integrity background and seriousness that I have want to travel with a band?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be the biggest story of your life.
Oh, who knew? Who knew? You know, and my advice, by the way, to any young journalist out there,
yeah,
is never walk away from any story.
You never know.
You never know where it's going.
Now, what was the view of the news establishment? Because, you know, 21 years old, you're out there with other reporters who were, you know, older than you, more wizened. They, you know, as much as you didn't want to be on this story, these guys hated being on this story.
Well, they were very cynical. In every town, there was a news conference. And if you could take the tapes of every single news conference and play it back, you would have one of the greatest comedy albums of all time. Because the reporters were so conservative, and I don't mean politically, but conservative in their ways. You know, they would ask them questions like, so is your hair real?
Yep.
How does it feel to be a mop top? Are you an ant or a beetle? Was your mother an entertainer? John said no, but she cooked very well. the questions like, what kind of women do you like? Is the only married beetle? Do you mess around? And silly, stupid questions. And one of the reasons that I think that I clicked with them is that I was a serious guy, and I asked them questions about issues of the day. And I think they did not like being treated as, mop tops.
Yep,
you know what I mean?
We actually have audio here from the Beatles' first news conference when they came in on that Pan Am flight to New York City and had a little Q&A. This is about 45 seconds worth of the Beatles.
I'm sure it's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah, the Beatles and the reporters the first time.
I'm trying to ask a question. Would you be quiet?
No! Sorry.
Next question.
No, we need money first.
There's a question here.
How many are bald if you have to wear those bigs?
To all of us.
I'm bald.
You're bald? Oh, we're all bald.
Don't
yeah.
Tell anyone, please.
I'm deaf and dumb, too.
It's a joke of a marriage.
We're only a
dad. Quiet, please.
Quiet, please.
This is a man
of
all
right, quiet.
Are you for real?
Come and have a feel.
That's yeah.
Listen, I got a question. Do you hope to get a haircut at all?
No.
Nope.
No.
No, thanks.
I had one yesterday.
That's no lie.
See, most of the questions are about their hair. Are you going to get a haircut?
It's kind of interesting because they were very good sense. They had a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
And they knew how to play the crowds. By the second or third or fourth news conference of the 1964 summer tour, they were right on. Sometimes later on in the tour, they got a little fed up with them. But they were just tired of the same questions. Occasionally, someone would be smart enough to ask them, well, what do you think of this music or what do you think of that? Or do you like movies? Or, you know, they ask some cultural questions.
Yep.
But very rarely did that happen. And also, even Huntley and Brinkley, the great anchors, expressed scorn at them on the air.
Yep.
People would make faces at them. I guess I told you the story. My father, who was, you know, a very intelligent man, came up to me and said, watch your back. They're a menace to society. And I said, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, so for me... going into it, I knew I was into a phenomenon. Little did I know that I was into 40 years of total idolatry.
Yep.
But, you know, the only reason we're still talking about them here, Paul, is not the fanaticism. I can talk all I want about the fans who stood there with their eyes straight open, tears streaming down their face, clutching the seat behind them, grabbing their hair, convinced that each one of them was talking directly to them. But the fact remains that the reason we're still talking about them is because forever and forever, The music still stands out today as the greatest body of work ever assembled in several lifetimes.
And you can hear that when Larry talked to the Beatles, the interviews were a little bit different because he actually got to know the guys, and he's included with his Ticket to Ride book a whole CD of his conversations with the Beatles, and it is terrific stuff. And I appreciate
it's a lot of fun, and I think that people will enjoy that part of it.
Yep, and I appreciate you coming back on the show to talk about it today. Thank you, Larry.
Well, it's always great to be in St. Louis, you know.
Larry Kane here on the Paul Harris Show on the 40th anniversary of the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. This is the Big 550 KTRS.